Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Coleman Had a Dream podcast. We are back. Welsh football is back. International football is back. Exciting times. Wales named their squad today. We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be looking back at the Armenia and Turkey games. This is obviously our first recording since those wonderful months. Ruth, I'm joined back by you, as always. How are you doing?
Okay, all right. It's been a funny summer. Operation for me, operation for my husband, but we're both recouping well now and on the mend. So, but it's kept us out of circulation a bit over the summer. So it's nice to be able to get back and podcasting.
Exactly. And back to be talking about Welsh football. Going to be good. We have got a lot for you to get your ears around today. As I said, we're going to be looking back at the games against Armenia and Turkey and just more looking at the bigger picture. I don't think we need to go into a blow-by-blow account again of just how bad that was. We're going to be looking at the squad that was announced today, and we are going to be having a quick roundup of the clubs, Cardiff, Swansea, Wrexham and Newport, and a mention for Merthyr and the Welsh leagues a little bit as well. Ruth, let's get straight into it. We don't want to delve too much.
Do we have to?
I suppose we don't want to go too deep into it, but let's start on that balmy evening against Armenia. Obviously, Wales lost 4-2. I mean, it goes without saying that it was obviously very, very disappointing. And I think whilst the Turkey game was a frustration as well, the real disappointment of the window is obviously that Armenia game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that if you're hoping to qualify for these sorts of tournaments, that's exactly the sort of game you've got to win. And I think with us having an eight-game window, it's the sort of perilousness of losing such a game becomes very, very, very strong and very visceral. And I think that, you know, that also builds into how we feel about the game. It was just, like you say, it was just incredibly disappointing, particularly when we had such a positive start and then just seemed to somehow back off. There was so much about that game that was frustrating. You know, the red card again. There was just so much going on that just left you hitting your head against the wall.
I think that is the thing that stood out for me, is the bonkersness of it almost. Yeah. I think to go 1-0 up, and just before we went 1-0 up, I don't know how much of this people are going to remember, either through forcing it out of their brains or alcohol trying to numb the pain on the evening. But obviously, before Dan James scored, a great little ball across by Brennan Johnson and everything, Kiefer Moore's had a really, really good chance himself. And actually, when you're looking at that, we should be the James goal really should be our second goal on the evening in terms of chances.
Yeah.
And we looked completely in control. We were kind of aggressive. We were on the front foot. And it was a bit more like the Wales that we want to see, right? And then I don't think there was a tactical reason why we kind of dropped in a little bit and they started to get on top of us. But they just felt like they overwhelmed us a little bit in certain areas. And I just want to focus briefly on one thing, because in preparation for this, I listened back to our old podcast from then, the preview game, which was entertaining in itself. And one of the things I mentioned, and I'm not, you know, touting myself as the next Pep Guardiola here, but one of the things I mentioned was balls in the channel, and they will pull the ball back to the edge of the box and that sort of area and attack those spaces. Have first-time long-range shots, and that's where their joy comes from. Out wide, pulling the ball back. And I appreciate that the first goal, that fella, that boy, if he hits that shot 99 times out of 100, that ball flies into Rose Ed of the Canton stand and, you know, knocks the Barry Orne's trumpets out of their mouths. Instead, it absolutely flies into the top corner. It's a great, great finish. The second goal, they get wide, they get behind the fullback. A bit of, you know, poor defending, I appreciate, that precedes that, but the ball comes across, not far off a free header. I don't want to go too hard here, because and I'll come to why in a sec, but if I can notice those things, and I am no football genius, as everyone who has listened to the podcast will attest, then other people who are better at football than me need to be able to spot that and do something about it. We should have been working on that all week. That was their one threat, and we let them have it twice. You could even make the argument that the Joe Morel turnover comes from that, where in a sense where they've kind of high-pressed in one area and everyone's bombed on, the space has opened up for the lad, and he's... maybe that was the fourth goal I'm thinking, where he's kind of bent it in at the beat ward at the near post. I just think we highlighted that before the game, and they've got in that space time and time again. Sometimes it was our own doing, as it was with the second goal to an extent, but they've got into that space. They've worked the ball into the box. They've done exactly what you and I talked about that they are dangerous at doing, and we let them do it once, twice, and to an extent, three times. And that is the thing that really stood out to me around the whole game, how we disappeared as an attacking force ultimately. They sort of controlled, whilst we may have had a lot of ball, they kind of controlled where we had it. And then when they kind of pushed on, they attacked in areas we knew they would attack. And yes, absolutely unbelievable finishes for three of those four goals. But it's come from areas where we knew they were going to be a threat and they attacked them. And that's the thing that really stood out to me, because, as I say, if you and I can spot these things, Ruth, I see no reason why an actual football analyst should be able to do it and do something about it in preparation for the match.
I think space is the key theme to this, actually. Like looking back at the first goal, I did the same. I went through some highlights over the weekend just to kind of refresh ahead of, no, we were discussing it today, highlights, perhaps not being the world. And good one. And what just looking at that first goal as an illustrative example, there were six of us in the box and three of them, yet every one of their three players had an immense amount of space. And the ball didn't have to travel the trajectory it did. It could have gone to any one of the three and that player would have had space.
Yeah.
And so to be so vulnerable, as you say, to something that should have been highlighted, but that's just such basic play. You cannot give the opposition that level of space and time in the offensive third. And we were doing it, as you said, again and again and again. And I mean, we'll get into the wider picture of what this means about like how we play and how we set up and things. But I think that was the frustration, because even after that goal, we then had some opportunities. There was a good save from Brennan Johnson on about the half an hour. Rodden had that sort of glancing header that went wide. There was a couple of other chances at the start of the second half. I remember James sort of flying, you know, there was a shot that kind of flew across the goal. So we backed off, yes. And we clearly weren't playing with the intensity that we had in the first 15 minutes or so. But we didn't completely stop making chances. We were doing things. And yet we didn't have the kind of nounce and sort of wherewithal and maturity to say, look, we know what we've done wrong with this first goal. Let's make sure we don't make the same mistake again.
Absolutely.
And there was none of that going on through the game, which was even more frustrating, I think, than not highlighting it in the first place. Like, here's very evidently something we're not getting right. What are we doing about it?
I think nouse is an interesting word you use there, actually, because Harry Wilson gets a goal back to make it 3-2 in the 72nd minute. Zelarayan scores his fourth goal, his second goal, 2 minutes after that. Two more minutes after that, we go down to 10 men. And I think of all the things you can describe this Wales team as over the last few years, you may not think they're a laugh a minute and thrilling attacking force, but I think we're sensible, logical, reliable. We know what we've got to do to see out games. The Ukraine game is a perfect example of what I think represents what this team is. We're going to have a couple of chances. We'll get one of them, and then we're basically going to strangle you into submission, basically bore you into submission, which is great. Loads of time for it. So that is another alarm bell to me, is that not only did that not come in an attacking sense, in the fact I didn't really, you know, we did create our chances, but then on the other side of the ball, we were a shambles. And, you know, we've created chances there. You know, we had 18 shots, five of them on target. My stat of the game is that Armenia had four shots on target and scored four goals. So I would say to flip side that, and you can tell me if I'm being too generous, Ruth, I do think there is an element, and I reiterate, there is an element, I do not think this is the reason we lost the match. I think there is an element to this game where every now and again, every football team has it, where you have a day where everything you do works. And to use Newcastle as my example, as is often my way. First day of the season against Aston Villa, we went 1-0 up, they got back to 1-1, and basically every time Newcastle got the ball after that, we scored. We won the game 5-1, and everyone was like, oh, brilliant, blah, blah, blah. It was great. I had a lovely time. I had a terrific evening drinking beer. But ultimately, that's just one of those days. And what the problem is that Newcastle have played 2 games in 2 weeks since. We've lost both of them. We also had a game against Liverpool where sometimes these things just happen. Darwin Núñez, as another perfect example, comes off the bench. I wouldn't call him hopeless last season, but he was certainly not, you know, Haaland levels. And he's hit two, aptly pinged two right in the bottom corner against against Nick Pope, against in the post, in it goes. And we lose the game. Sometimes it just happens that way, and I'm not making excuses. We were shite. But I also think it's worth putting into context a little bit that I think if you gave those players those opportunities another 100 times, I think they're probably only scoring one or two of those chances, with the exception of the header, which is dreadful defending. I make no excuse for that. Just the build-up, everything around the second goal was a farce. So I do want to counter it a little bit by saying those things. I'm not sure if I'm being a little bit too generous, but I do think there was an element of that. I think on the balance of play, probably a draw would have been the fair result. We both had chances. They scored theirs. We didn't. And again, I know maybe I'm being a bit generous there, but I would say that is a fairer reflection of things. But obviously, you know, football doesn't work that way.
No, I ended up with the same feeling having watched the highlights. So it was about 25 minute representation of the game that I watched over the weekend, as I said, just to refresh. And I'd forgotten how many chances we had.
Yeah.
I'd gone away in this bubble of, we were appalling, we didn't do anything, we scored in the whatever it was, the 12th minute and or something, and then did barely touch the ball afterwards. You know, I'd come away with that kind of perception. And it was a good jolt to remember that we had created further chances.
Yeah.
And some of them were good chances as well. And they would, you know, on a different day, they would have gone in. But it doesn't excuse the fact that we let four in. You know, those chances become important because we let four in. Normally, if we score two goals, we know what the result should be if we score two goals. We shouldn't be relying on needing to score five. That's not who we are, you know? So I think it's fair to say that my view of how we played offensively had perhaps been tarnished by the result, but it doesn't take away from what we need to say about how we played defensively.
I couldn't agree more. And I think looking at how we set up and everything, a lot of the things that we did talk about holding midfielders and blah, 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 all of that stuff happened. So, you know, also I do think every now and again, and I'm only saying this because in the next part of our show, so to speak, I will be digging out Rob Page. So I want to get this bit in now, which is sometimes there's, as I say, these things happen defensively and offensively, and there's some things that he can't handle. And I know there's some stuff you can point at the manager and say it's not good enough, we should have been better drilled, and we could have picked different players. Anyone can say that, and the same thing can happen. I don't think it's the manager's fault that Joe Rodden strode out of defence for that goal and has made an absolute balls up of it when he's had maybe two or three options to play a simple pass and do so. I don't think that's anywhere near the manager's fault. Again, I think the team was set up in the way that most of us probably would have liked to have seen it set up. So for everyone who's saying Page out, I'm not there yet, but I think he did everything everyone wanted to in the first instance. Then there's a load of individual errors. These lads have had a worldie. You know, I think it was a perfect storm of shite was the word I used earlier, and I stick with that. And I think that is the fairest way to describe it. And I say that now. What are we, 3 months down the line? Because at the time, I was apoplectic. Very rarely comes downstairs when Wales is on and says, I think you need to chill out a bit, mate. that day she came down the stairs and said, you need to chill out a bit, mate. So that tells me everything I need to know. I'm not the calmest football watcher at the best of times, but for her to come downstairs and tell me to chill out. So I do recognise the anger, and I'm not looking back at it with rose-tinted glasses, and I'm not trying to be pro-Page, because I don't think that's my stance per se, but I just think there's a tinge of context that I feel is needed there. Am I trying to make the best of this?
No, I think the problem fundamentally is what we were saying at the beginning. When this represents 1/8 of your qualifying opportunities, yeah, it takes on a significance that it doesn't if you're looking at Newcastle having a similar game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just there's a ratio thing here which makes everything so... it just gives an importance to each individual game, doesn't it? An immense importance to each individual game. And if we'd have had 6 points from the first two games, and I think four was, you know, we were doing pretty well with the four, but if we'd had 6 points from the first two games, then you look at this a little differently again. So everything has its context. But I think it's also it's the most real manifestation of how bad we've been for about 18 months.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a one-off game. This was just the most visceral, obvious, disappointing manifestation of that. But it's not like we've been playing well, and then you have one of those days. And as you say, they have a worldie, and you just got to shrug your shoulders and move on because you've got confidence in what's happening. And it's just one of those things at that point. It's not one of those things, is it? It's who we are at the minute.
Yeah.
It was just the worst version.
I think that's exactly it. And context is the word. The wider context, which we were looking at here, is it was Armenia at home, not acceptable. You've got to win the game. It's not the context of the whole 18 months, as you absolutely rightly say, is we've been very poor over these last 18 months. We've just kind of got away with stuff. Part of it, I think, was because we were at the World Cup, the excitement of going to the World Cup and the top tier of the Nations League and all that, that wiped away a lot of our crap at the time. And now it's very, this is at the forefront, the way how poorly we're playing is at the forefront of the situation all of a sudden. And we did what we needed to in the home game against Latvia and obviously did very well against Croatia. And now all of a sudden, we've lost to Armenia. I think we've won, what do we say last time? I think we were on 2-14 wins or something like that. Not good enough. The real issue I had actually in the window, to slightly move on, unless you've got anything else you want to add about Armenia, I actually had a bigger problem with the Turkey game, to be honest. And I'll tell you why. It's because going into that match, my expectation was absolute zero. But because of the circumstance we'd created for ourselves, we needed to do something to demonstrate that things were different. And we went into the Turkey match, and they're a decent side, they're in good form, blah, blah, blah. The scoreline's 2-0, and if we don't have a man sent off, I still don't think anything changes in the game. But we are exceptionally lucky that we've lost that game 2-0. We've gone into that game wide open. We looked zero threat. Part of that is Kiefer Moore's fault, and part of that became Joe Morrell's fault. But we were zero threat. And I think we talk about context and things that aren't the manager's fault, blah, blah. It's not the manager's fault that Joe Morrell has gone and done something daft, because it is a red card. At the time in the stadium, I was really confused, but it is a red card. In the same way that what Kiefer Moore has done is a red card, that isn't the manager's fault. Well, actually, I think it is. I think it's a demonstration of the frustration that people feel. We were so drilled before, whether it was with Giggs or Coleman or whoever, we knew everything that we were doing. Everyone knew their job. No one messed about. We even had that game in the Euros, so actually I appreciate Rob Page was the manager, where he told Kiefer Moore to go on and jump with his arms tucked by his side so he didn't get booked. Everyone knew everything. And yes, that got it turned into frustration later down the time. Line, sorry, but people were pissed off, and I think it demonstrated people were desperate to try and do something. We weren't in control of ourselves in the Armenia game. We were not in control of what we were doing in the Turkey game whatsoever. And I've heard people, the Ellis James podcast, for example, at the time, he said that he was actually quite proud of how the players dug in and kind of churned themselves out of that situation. God, I thought we were dreadful. And I'll proper carry my digging on in a minute, but I don't know what you thought, if I'm being too harsh there, but I thought we were really, really poor against Turkey.
I think I might be somewhere between you and Ellis on this one. I think the difference between Armenia and Turkey was our poor play wasn't as vulnerable, ironically, to how the Turks were playing versus how Armenia were playing. And so I think the fact that the Turks weren't rushing at us the way the Armenians had been, I think it let us get away with things a little bit. I think there's a difference between Moore's red card and Morel's red card. I agree, both of them are red cards, but I'm not going to argue about that. But Moore's is just flat out stupidity,
yeah.
Whereas Morel is bad timing, overreaching, being given a hospital pass by Conor Roberts. There are somewhat mitigating circumstances. That's a red card that comes from play. Moore's is a red card that comes from up in his head and doing something ludicrous.
I just want to interrupt you there, Ruth, because I principally I get it, and I've stood up for Joe Morel here, and I'm a big fan of him and what he does for Wales. I just think that is the reason I think it's stupid is because you're right. All of those things combined, hospital pass, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
That is on the edge of their penalty area. He just needs to let the lad have the ball. It doesn't matter. If that's on the edge of our penalty area, he lunges in because feels like he's got to do something, then I get that. But I think my point is the stupidity is because I think everyone is just like on edge. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it was a stupid challenge in the same way. But I think there's a difference between doing something mistakenly that is football,
right,
and doing something mistakenly that is your drunk down the pub behaviour, frankly, you know? So that's the difference for me. I don't think neither thing should happen. I think in the Turkey game, I think we just rode our luck and it eventually ran out. They had the two disallowed goals. We had that save from Ward for the penalty. We just rode that luck, and eventually in the last 10 minutes or so, it got too much. I think my concern is I'm still... if you look at that as a defensive game, we, in inverted commas, I think you said in your notes, they could have had five. Two disallowed, a penalty, the two they actually scored. And I think there's all the concerns of what it says about how we play defensively and the space that we give people.
I think that's the thing. I said in the notes, I think if that had been 5-0, which it could feasibly have been, we wouldn't have been able to mow much. And again, problems in behind the fullback is where the first disallowed goal comes from. How many times is that going to happen against Armenia before you think you can't do something bad against Turkey? It's mad. And it's not good football that he's offside. We've not played a high line cleverly. It's blind luck. There's nothing done that we've...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not like he's 5 yards offside. He is offside, but he's not... And, you know, own goal for the finish... Just panic, just pandemonium at the back there. The second disallowed goal, I think it was like some sort of weird handball. Those are another ones on another day, because basically no one actually seems to understand the handball rule anymore. That could quite feasibly have been given. And again, dreadful defending in the build up to that.
The first
dreadful
one as well, with the VAR situation and the fact that they didn't have the lines. The VAR team didn't get the lines on the... Yeah. For the offside in the first one, and they threw it back to the referee. He would have been perfectly reasonable saying, actually, my linesman had a better view of this. If you can't give me lines on the ground, the linesman had a better view of this, I'll go with their decision. And that would have been a perfectly reasonable outcome from what they were provided with. So we got lucky in a host of ways.
And then obviously the penalty save, very, very good save. Again, that's one of them. And they've had to score a brilliant goal to kind of put the goal to bed as well. So, you know, I get it, but I was really disappointed with the outcome, rather than the outcome, because again, errors that we saw being made against Armenia, we did the same exact things against Turkey. And I know that Morel sent off, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that should change the game plan, which ultimately, if we're being honest, was we're going to try and nick something on the break. And as soon as Brennan Johnson started hobbling about a bit, we were just like, well, this is the end of that then. We had that one exactly. We had that one break at the start of the second half, I think it was, where we've had the good break and the free kick from Wilson from where we were in the away end, obviously opposite end of the ground to that. There was like a half a second moment there where we're just like, oh my God, that's gone in. And obviously it's not. But it was that was it. And then I know it was against 10 men, but I was really, really disappointed. Again, not with the outcome in the sense that of just in the way we approached the game, even with 11 men, same mistakes were there. And it was just mind-blowing frustrating. I will add to that, that for those people who went to Turkey, had a great time at Istanbul. Absolutely bonkers place. Brilliant. Absolutely loved it. Had a great couple of days there. Went across then to Samsun. Comfortably one of the top three oddest places I've ever been. Why they put the game there, absolutely beyond me. The stadium was miles away from anything. The traffic was awful before the game. There was some level of apocalyptic storm that happened just before the game. So it was just, roads were closed. It was flooding everywhere. It was impossible to get there. Getting back afterwards was a nightmare. They kept us back in the ground for ages afterwards with no communication. There was no, the food and drink at the ground was, you could buy like a bag of what I think were like sunflower nut seed things or like small plastic cartons of water. That was your lot. It was very, very surreal. And I like Samsun before the match was fantastic. Great atmosphere, a load of good bars all along the beach. Had a lovely time. But oh my God, what a strange place that was. But loved Istanbul. But yeah, an entertaining away trip. I've got to tell you this one story, Ruth. We were umming and ahhing about how to get to the ground, and me and Oz were like, we'd gone to one bar, had actually run out of beer. There were that many Wales fans that had gone there, which was hilarious. So we went to this bar down the road, which had looked like it had been looted. It was just carnage. There were like tables and chairs everywhere. It was just Wales away to its best. And there was a little like offie next to it. So a load of lads just drinking in the street. Anyway, these three blokes who I would say were in their late 40s, were kind of like singing and pushing each other and being all over the place. And one of them, there was like a tiny little wall between the pavement and the beach, and they were kind of messing about and everything else. And one of these blokes has stood near the wall, and his mate has come up to him and just shoved him backwards. And because obviously he's by the wall, he's just gone arse over tit onto the beach. These two, like, we laughed, but these two, his two other mates, thought this was the single funniest thing that had ever happened to them. But the fellow who'd been pushed over had proper banged his head on the hard sand. And I think there was a legitimate chance he might have been knocked out for about 5 seconds and concussed. He eventually comes back round, and through a combination of alcohol and possibly concussion, just can't get himself back up again. And he's trying to like pull himself back up onto the little concrete step thing. And his other mate, who was just watched this whole thing unfold, just walked straight over to him and just pushes him back over onto the beach again. And honestly, me and Oz were dying laughing. So he's then on a beach. So the other lad then pushed his other mate over onto the thing. So the two of them are rolling around on the beach. They cannot get up over this. And this step is 1 foot tall. Like, it is not like Everest. And these lads are steaming. Anyway, so we would just cry and laugh. We would get into a taxi, go to the ground. And the game kicks off. And one of these three lads walks in into the ground. And Oz gives me a nudge. And I turn around. And one of these three lads, and if you listen and you're one of these three lads, you will know who you are because of what I'm about to say next. And I would love to know what happened in the interim. This lad has turned up and he had the new white shirt that we wore to the World Cup. And he has got a cut over his right eyebrow. And this huge comedy plaster that looked like it was from an episode of Mr. Bean slapped on it. He's got blood marks all over his shirt and on his face. And I was just like, if that is how bad you were on sand, I cannot imagine what has happened to you, my friend, to have this big cut over your eye and like the big comedy bandage and everything. And we got like, we were looking at each other just like, this is why people do Wales away. It's not, it's all, it's like we always say, it's never really about the football. I think these were just lads who were just, maybe it was the first time they'd been away together for a long time or something, I don't know. But I've never seen anything like it. It was pandemonium, Ruth. It was so funny. So if you're someone who got concussed and has a big gash on their head as a consequence of Turkey away, please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you and know that you've survived.
And you only saw one of the three at the stadium.
Yes. Well, the other two may have been there, but I recognised him straight away because of his shirt and then and obviously the cut and everything else. So I couldn't really remember the other two. One of his other two mates was topless as well. It was a topless bald man, which for Wales away regulars will know that is 90% of the people that go to Wales away. So that could have been anyone. But yeah, then to finish, as we're walking out of the ground, there's a load of Turkey fans like at the bit where the Wales fans were coming out to get on the buses to go back into town. And there's this one lad and he's, I don't know, like 20 years old and he's like stick thin. And he's saying to people as they're coming out, will you swap shirts with me? Will you swap shirts with me?
Yeah.
And my mate with the big thing on his head, his bloody Wales shirt, literally, literally bloody Wales shirt, goes, all right, mate, I'll swap with you. I don't think he was from Cardiff. But anyway, yeah, I'll swap with you. So he gives him this shirt. And this kid has now got what I would guess is an XXL Wales shirt. And he's just like, oh. And then he looks down at it and it's got bloody blood stains on it. And your man with a bandage on his head is trying to put his new, what I guess is probably slim fit, small shirt on. And I reckon he could get it over his head. And I don't think he could get it over his shoulders. I was just like, what is happening? I was just stood there like an 8-year-old. I was just staring. I was just like, what is going on in my life that I've made this decision, that I'm stood in this weird town in Turkey watching a nearly 50-year-old man trying to put a slim fit small football shirt on? It was hilarious. And eventually he turned around to him and was like, well, it doesn't fit. And I think the lad initially, the young Turkish lad, was just like absolutely delighted that he'd got his shirt back in the end. He literally just whacked his shirt off and straight back there. He's like, there you are, mate. Off he goes. Blood on his shirt. Oh, my God. Absolutely hilarious. And me and Owes at this point are like, just like looking at each other like, what is our lives? Absolute gold. Anyway, is there anything else we want to talk about there?
That might be a good point for us to have a pause because I think we're about to lose connection.
No. Okay, let's have a little break and we'll be back in a sec. So here we are back after our little break. We're going to look at the wider context stuff there. I've talked a lot there, Ruth, about my the highlight of my funny story. I guess the simple question to start us off is, are you page in or page out?
I'm stick where we are at the minute, but more because I don't think there's a whole lot of better options. We're almost certainly relying on playoffs here. He's shown that he can get us through a playoff series. I don't think it's a great evidence base, but I'm not ready to really throw everything out right yet. I think there's always got to be a monetary consideration with this, with the FAW. I think the level of manager we can afford is always going to be an issue. The sort of person who's going to take what we can afford to pay. We're always in this dilemma of wanting a manager who's at this tier and being able to afford someone who's down at this tier. And I think we're where we are. And I mean, part of me as well, I've tried to sort of review the last few games a bit more sort of holistically and perhaps a little less knee-jerk to that one Armenia game, which that feels like the key result, although I appreciate what you were saying about how you think things went in Turkey. And when we saw the starting 11 for the Armenia game, I think most of us were probably quite content with that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that Paige can do anything terribly different from a playing personnel point of view. We've covered a lot in the past the issues around player time for their clubs. Does seem to be improving a little bit, and I know we'll look at that when we talk about the squad. A lot of debate about the four at the back, five at the back. And, you know, most of our success historically has come from five at the back. And I think there's a kind of almost like a yearning to go back to that, because almost from a bit of a safety blanket point of view. But it would be invidious of me to suddenly be spouting about that, because over the last 12 months or so, I've probably more advocated for the four, because I like the space that it provides up front. The trouble is, it's not gelling, it's not working. I think it's as much because of where our weakness is our defensive midfield. And I think our defensive midfield is leaving our, when we have four at the back, it's leaving them very open. When we played Croatia, we played Ampadu and Morel. When we played Latvia, we played Ampadu and Morel. When we played Armenia, we played Ampadu and sort of Aaron Ramsey in that defensive pair. And then when we played Turkey again, at least at the start of the game, it was Ampadu and Morel. And if you look at the Croatia game, the Latvia game, to a lesser extent, the Turkey game, that defensive unit of six, though not great, wasn't appalling in the way it was in the Armenia game. And I wonder whether we're falling back on the discussion about five at the back, when actually our issue is defensive midfield. And if we could solidify defensive midfield and take a little bit of pressure off the back four, maybe get Roberts and Nico Williams not to be quite such attacking fullbacks as particularly Nico has a tendency. I think we might be missing Norrington Rhys-Davies there, actually, if we're going to play as a four, because I think there's a temperament difference between how he and Nico play, and I think his slightly more defensive emphasis might help. But fundamentally, I'm wondering whether we're diving into it being a defensive issue, and I'm not saying they're playing well because they're not, but actually I think we're putting a pressure on them from midfield that we've got to address.
I think there's a lot of what you say there I agree with the four and the five. I'm in no position to say much, because I've been back in and forth in about it, as we've talked about here. I think the real issue here, the more I've thought about it in preparing for this, is we don't know what our plan is. And that is because every single time we get to a game, everything seems to change. Be it a defensive pairing, whether we're playing five at the back, whether we're playing wing backs. Some of that's out of Page's hands. You know, like Moore is suspended for the last game, and obviously is going to be suspended against Latvia. So there's an element we have to rotate. And the part of the problem is that there are players that we have to use even though we don't want to. And that isn't Rob Page's fault. We don't have enough holding midfielders. You're absolutely right. In a way to change that, we've tried to be more offensive. That hasn't worked because we're asking Aaron Ramsey to do something he's not great at, and we've not gelled an attacking force, mainly I think because we keep chopping and changing what the plan is. That is Page's fault. Yeah. And I think what's hard is that everything, in a sense, was set in stone before the World Cup about what we wanted, how we were going to play, what our qualification campaign was going to look like, the playoffs, all of that stuff. And the reason for that is because we basically, as has always been the way with Wales, we knew we had to accommodate Gareth Bale, Aaron Ramsey, Joe Allen. We've gone on, and then at the World Cup, we didn't have Allen. Bale was not at his best. Neither was Ramsey. So we had to do something different. And then in the Nations League games, we tried a few things that didn't work, but we wrote it off because it was the Nations League and we were all worried about the World Cup. And then we got to the World Cup. I don't think I have a huge amount of criticism at Page about the World Cup per se, with the exception of the Iran game. I think the USA game, we weren't great. He tweaked things. We played well second half. We got a reward against a very good side, I think, in the US. We got battered by England, who got beaten by the finalists in the run through, and we're quite unlucky on that day. On another day, England score that penalty and go on. I have no problem with losing, you know, relatively speaking, to England 3-0. So I don't have a problem with the World Cup. What it did was it opened up a can of worms that was then it's impossible to get out. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube once you've squirted it. And that's what happened here. And now there is so many worms and so much toothpaste that no one knows what's a worm and what's a bit of toothpaste. I don't know where I'm going with this stupid analogy.
Absolutely stupid analogy.
Yeah, although I do quite like it. The point being that he doesn't know either.
Yeah.
So as a consequence, I think part of our problem as fans is it's hard to get behind someone or something that you actually don't really fully understand yourself. And I don't think we should be going into games as a fan base as guessing games. It shouldn't be that way. I think he's trying to outthink himself. I think he's trying to show that he's capable of doing the job by trying to be clever. And it's not his strength. Go and do the thing you're good at.
It's not our strength either.
Exactly.
Is it?
And again, there's one thing that I think isn't Page's fault, and we'll talk about the squad in a sec. There's one thing that's not Page's fault. We are, with the absence of Bale and Allen, and soon Aaron Ramsey and so on, we have gone backwards to the just about Chris Coleman times, I would say, in terms of our depth, like pre-Chris Coleman depth, in that when a player got injured, the person who replaced them wasn't anywhere near as good as the big person. And sometimes you can get away with that. And, you know, Dave Edwards and David Vaughan or whatever, we could get away with that in certain areas. You can't replace Gareth Bale. You can't do what Joe Allen does. And I love Joe Morel. He's been outstanding for us, and I have no desire to criticise him, whatever. He's not Joe Allen. He can't do the same thing. So as a consequence, that jump, there's nothing Page can do. There's no real alternatives. The boy at Ipswich maybe can play in there, who's not got picked for the squad. But the step is still pretty huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is Page's fault. What I do think is Page's fault is he cannot make his mind up about what he wants to do. And I've really thought about this, and I'm going to stick with my what I've said now moving forward, which is, I said at the start, I don't think Page was the person to replace Giggs. He was the person who did a good enough job in that interim. The longer this goes on, the worse it's going to get. I held my hands up with the World Cup because he got us there. But really, you, me, a lot of people who'd had this conversation were right about that. So he's got to do something now, which means that he's grabbing some credibility back. Because as a squad announcement showed today, he can't do anything right, really. For everyone he picked, people are going to be pissed off he left out someone else and vice versa. So I think we have to go back to five at the back. It's the only thing we can do, I think, which utilises more players than it doesn't in their best positions. We've got people who are defending, who are playing relatively regularly in defence. We've got two attacking wing-backs rather than full-backs, so let's use them. Let's pretend Morel hasn't got a suspension. He is a centre. He has a holding midfielder alongside Ampadu. He can play in there. I wonder if maybe Ben Davis can play in there as a one-off game against Latvia in Riga, just to plug that gap in the interim. I don't know. If we haven't got that, then we've got Ramsey who can play as a 10. We can got more up front, and we can have someone else who's play. Like, that, to me, is relatively settled. Everyone knows their job there, and that works. I think he's got to go back to that. And I think he's got to stick with that. And even if we lose both of these games, the friendly and the competitive game, he's got to stick with that. Because if he does something and then changes again in the next window, he's finished. So for me, to answer my own question half an hour ago, he has to stay because there is no credible alternative. He has to stay because we're in the middle of a campaign that we can still qualify for if things go our way and we, you know, win some games. And then there's the chance of the playoff to come. So we will stay because it's the realism of the circumstance. But I think at the point he's got a shred of credibility left with some people. Not everyone, but some people. And I think now, if he doesn't stick to his guns, he's finished. And there's just no way back from that now. So for me, I think he's just about hanging on. He's just about got my support, because I don't think there's anything to gain from be booing him. And if you do go to Riga or whatever, or the game in against Korea and you boo, I think you should be ashamed of yourself. But this is it for him, I think, now. And I think this is it for us and probably this kind of generation of player, because if it doesn't work out, Ramsey will go, Hennessy will go, and we really are in the mire a little bit then after that. So I think he needs something for him, but I think he needs something for us as well.
Do you think sticking to his guns, though, means sticking with a back four, given that's what we've been playing of late?
Maybe. I wouldn't do that, I think, is what I'm trying to say. But I think he's got to prove to himself and us and the players that, do you know what? This is my thing. This is my setup. This is what I'm going to do. And if I get, you know, if I get done with it, then I get done with it. This is what I wanted to do, and it didn't work. The chopping and changing and the messing about and the tweaking formation and putting this, but it's just it generates a dislike for him and the system and the circumstance, and I just don't think that's helpful to anyone. So I think he's got to stick to his guns, and if that means he picks five now and stays with the five at the back and everything that goes with that, then great. If he sticks with a four, great, but he's got to stick with that now and not chop and change, what regardless of what you or me or Joe Bloggs on the street thinks is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot, haven't we, for a what feels like a long time about the lack of a clear plan.
Yeah.
And the lack of a framework and an ability for player X to be missing and player Y to come in and be able to play a role. And I think that shilly and shallying around what and who are we has been a worry for a long time. So I think where I'm at is I've got very little confidence in that happening based on what's been going on.
Yeah, same here.
And so I think that's where I'm at a dilemma with Paige and his role, because I'm not seeing a plan. And if we had a plan and it wasn't working, that's easier to live with than just not having a plan and it's not working. So I think, as you were saying, I mean, what you were saying about the Armenian, looking at the Armenians prior to that window and how they played and how that meant we needed to defend and it not happening, it all just screams of a lack of, and I don't want to say a lack of understanding of football because that's not fair because these guys are experienced, but somehow taking that information, synthesizing it and turning it into what we have to do isn't working. And I've got no great confidence that it's going to be any better this time. I think where we may be better off this time is the fact that some of our players, a much better proportion of our players, are getting regular play at their clubs. And I think, but we're only, what, 5-6 games into the season, so who knows how much of a difference it'll make. But I think that takes some of the, can I get 60 minutes out of this player? Can I get 70 minutes out of the player? Can I get 75 minutes? I think it takes some of that off the table, and that must be a complication when you're planning a game. And I don't think we can pretend it hasn't been for Paige. There's nothing he can do about that. So I think the fact that you go into a game knowing that player X is probably only going to be able to give you 65 minutes, and you also know that there isn't a ready replacement for that player at the 65th minute, does make it difficult to plan. It goes back to what you were saying about how Coleman could substitute someone in, and yeah, they might not be at the level, you know, you're missing Joe Ledley, you might not have exactly the right cog to fit that hole, but you had someone that did the job well.
I think
Paige is missing that, and I think that plays into the dilemmas about how we play. But I don't like the fact that it feels like we've been twisting and turning. And talking ourselves into corners and dragging ourselves out again, then talking ourselves into another corner, and we just can't go on like that.
Yeah, I agree, and I also, you know, the lack of a replacement is the big thing. I've been thinking about this a lot. Oshan has obviously always mentioned, I'm not sure he would want the job, given he's worked in the Premier League and the previous job he had with Morocco, which has obviously come to fruition. I don't think he would want it. The only name I can get to, and I know this wouldn't be popular, but the only name I can get to is Tony Pulis, in that he's Welsh. He's out of work, so wouldn't cost a lot of money. He could probably be happy enough to fit straight in. He would improve our defensive structure, even if we wouldn't be gripping to watch, and maybe that could be helpful in a playoff circumstance. I still don't think it's a long-term solution, which I think is what the real problem is here, which is was a lack of real long-term solution. Let's look at the squad, Ruth, because I'm aware that time is running on here. Mm-hmm. I think Paige's next issue is he stuck between a rock and a hard place. I think he can't pick someone without someone kicking off, and I think he can't leave someone out without someone else kicking off. I would say the names that stand out to me are Joe Morel, because he can't play. I don't really get why we're playing Kiefer Moore.
He could play in the friendly, presumably.
Yeah, he can. Yeah, him and Kiefer Moore can play the friendly, but at this stage, I don't know what the value of that is.
What we're achieving at that point.
Because surely then you want to bed in your new system and you get the lads who are going to play in Riga involved in that. So why have you picked them? I would question Cullen over Ryan Hedges. And I'm not a huge advocate for Ryan Hedges long term. I just think he's a big lad. He can play up front. He's scoring goals for Blackburn. Well, I say, but he scored one goal for Blackburn. But, you know, he's a relative replacement for Moore if we're going to do that. So I'm a little bit surprised at that. I think four goalkeepers is a little bit odd, but
yeah, that shouts for someone carrying an injury, really, doesn't it?
The thing I think is most odd is that neither of them are playing. Neither of the four of them are playing. And again, I don't really know what the alternative is there. Maybe that young boy Eddie Beach, who's been on Chelsea's bench a couple of times this season, maybe that's a shout. I don't know, but you know, that I found that odd. But again, same with Josh Sheehan, sort of coming out of the relative international cold there. I don't know. The word
I like the fact that there's a bit more defensive, a bit slightly more thought about defensive midfield, that you've got Ampadu, Sheehan, James, Morel that could play there. I remember we went into the last window making the point that really we only had two holding midfielders at all. So I like that inclusion. I think it's interesting that Luke Harries isn't included. I think Reuben Colwell's kind of in that same boat as well. Neither of them are getting much minutes to speak of. I think there's also perhaps slightly more emphasis on here for players who are playing, as opposed to players who he might be throwing in for a little bit of development. I think he's put himself in the position where of the 25, virtually, I mean, you can argue that Metham isn't getting a huge amount of time and that sort of thing. And the goalkeepers is the obvious place where we're not getting time. But virtually everyone else is playing for their clubs. And some of them are playing very good minutes for their clubs. So I think that might be something that perhaps had an emphasis in terms of the 25. I think the Cullen Hedges argument's a bit mute, really. There may be a bit more of an argument, given it's we've got the friendly of, you know, I think under some circumstances, you might just put the young, you know, if you were in a better position, you might just put the young lads out, get them capped, get them used to playing in these sorts of games. But we can't afford to do that because our system is all over the place. So that South Korea game has got to be more of a system kind of solidification ahead of competitive games. So I don't have issues with these 25. I think, as we've said before, the starting 11 is probably permed from about 13 or 14 players. Your active bench and who will eventually get on the ground is probably another six players at most. And then your last five or six, you know, from kind of 22 to 28 on your squad list, at this, you know, you shrug your shoulders. Yeah. Someone might be in because, you know, someone else is carrying a bit of a knock. Someone, you know, I think at that point you could perm from another 15 players and we'd argue about that last five, and it is what it is, really.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You're looking at it, you've got, you know, I was thinking Ollie Cooper's been mentioned a lot. Will Volks, because we're missing a holding midfielder. I don't know, the Dylan Levitt situation, he's not there, of course. I've forgotten his name now, the boy at the holding midfielder at Ipswich, who's another one, for example. I've got a thing here I tweeted out earlier, what's your thoughts? Ewan Rowlands has replied, uninspiring. It does, however, reflect the careers of some of our next generation of players have stalled somewhat, rather than this be any direct reflection on Page. I think that's a perfect summary of the situation. Obviously, Luke Harris has not got the call-up. Colwell, again, has missed out. And I think that the point there is they're not playing. You know, I know Colwell is on his way back from injury and whatever, so that will reflect that. And he played, I think it was against Sheffield Wednesday, came on for Cardiff. So, you know, I don't really think that there's much he can do. I think he's damned if he doesn't, damned if he doesn't. I think there are players who he picks them, everyone's like, oh, what the hell's he doing there? And if he doesn't, then everyone's just like, oh, you should have picked, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think he's created that situation for himself to a relative extent. Is there anything else you wanted to add on the squad, Ruth?
No, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how we use the Korea game.
Yeah.
But obviously, we'll talk about that a bit more in the next pod.
Yeah, we're not just ignoring that. We're gonna record again next week ahead of those games to give like a proper preview, talk about the tactics and the opposition and all that stuff as we always do. Ruth, we've got about 5 or so minutes before we're an hour in, so let's have a quick run around the clubs as we promised at the start. Mixed start for Cardiff and Swansea, really, hasn't it? Like, not really, it's not really gelled. I would say Cardiff seem like, from what I've seen of them, they're close to clicking, but it kind of can't quite work. Swansea seem a little bit less certain of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually say it's been a pretty poor start for both of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
As you say, I think Cardiff are nearer, like, as you say, the switch clicking for them. I mean, I think both of them are another a reflection of, a team starting again with a new manager, and it just feels like it's another reboot, and it is what it is. And the start of the season, you're playing catch up later on because you've had the but it just seems to be year after year, frankly. And I can understand the frustration for the fans following those two.
Newport, on the other hand, have had a fantastic start to the season, which I'm delighted about. I was not sure about Graham Coughlin coming in, but he's really got the lads going well. And oh God, the boy up front who's scoring the goals. He's got off to a great start. I think he's scored 5 in 4 now. So a real great start for Newport, and something I didn't really expect from them this season. I expected that sort of start from Wrexham, if I'm being totally honest with you. And they are back to being some kind of mad football club where they are desperate to concede goals just so they can score more. I think I heard on Edge Foss, I think it was 28 goals there's been in the first 4 games.
They've scored 14 and conceded 14, and that was before last night Bradford cup game. Actually, they lost on penalties. I mean, there's only actually been one league defeat and quite a few draws in there. I think it's the conceding of the goals is clearly a red flag. I think we probably went into the season worried about were they going to score enough with Mullen away injured. But actually, that's the end of the field is doing fine. And I think it's interesting that Ben Foster has retired again. I've kind of, what does that quite say about what's happening there? They've brought in another new young goalkeeper. I also wonder whether the summer, whether there is a bit of a hangover and whether there was just too much going on over the summer between the different games they were playing, the tournaments they were playing, the trips, all the PR. And I understand it, don't get me wrong. I think you've got to strike while the iron's hot on these sorts of things. I think they're in just such an idiosyncratic, unusual position as a club. And I think they have to make hay while they can. But I do wonder whether the summer was just too intense of other things going on.
Yeah, and I think they have brought in a decent amount of new players. So I think things do need to settle down a bit, and I hope that Parkinson can manage that, because I think he's done well, obviously, bringing them up. I also wanted to mention Merthyr, who have won 4 from 4 in the league, absolutely fantastic, in the 7th tier of the pyramid.
I thought it was 6 they'd won. I thought it was 6 from 6.
Oh, is it? Well, there you are. You're the expert, Ruth. I will bow to your superior knowledge as I furiously Google this. What a start to the season for them! Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you can't do better than that. And just, I mean, good on them. What a way to hit the ground running, and good wins as well, from what I was reading. Not just accidental wins, as it were. But
accidental wins. How did you go on? We accidentally won on the weekend. big fan of that. You are right, as always, Ruth. It is 6 from 6. Huge apologies. They are top of the league, 2 points clear of Gosport Borough. Fantastic start to the season for them. So hope that continues, and hopefully Merthyr will continue ploughing on through. And maybe what a fantastic story it would be if they can get promoted this season. The last thing I wanted to say just before we run out of time is we've been talking a lot about the Cymru Premier League and the North and South Leagues recently, especially on Twitter, and we've had some great match reports from Paul and James. So please do head to the website, ColemanHadADream.com, to see some of them. been a mad couple of games, especially on the weekend, Ruth. There was late goals aplenty. I think Haverford West and Barrytown United both scored 96th minute equalisers to get themselves a point. Haverford West away at Carnarvon, which cost Carnarvon a top spot, I think clear top spot. TNS was where Barrytown United got their point. I think, I hope that it is a sign of things to come, in the sense that it's more of an open league this season, and more teams have got a chance to be in and around the top stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, it's very early days in that, but I think looking at some of the results, there's very much a pack there, isn't there? That are sort of moving through the results in a very similar way. I think it's just a hope for a better balance across the league as a whole during the season.
I very much agree. We will keep you up to date on club matters another time. Obviously, at the minute, with the games coming up, we're focusing on international stuff. But we are going to try and have a bit more of a focus on the Welsh, on the Cymru Premier League this season. Thank you very much to everyone for listening.
We should mention some of the great feedback we had on Ryan's pod last week. It was really nice to read people's comments on Twitter and how they'd enjoyed that.
Absolutely, and big thanks to Ryan again for coming to join us. It's created a lot of conversation and debate, which I think is important across the whole narrative of what we all want for the Welsh leagues, and hopefully that will continue. Thank you everyone for listening. If you want to support us, please go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream, and you can financially support us there. Give us a few quid to keep this podcast free. Equally, you can go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 to get yourself 10% off. And also, we get a little cut of that, which again helps keep this podcast free. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, Ruth, as always.
You're welcome. Nice to be talking about international football, even if not great.
Yeah, exactly. We are very much back, everybody. So we will be recording on Monday, hopefully, which will be out on Tuesday next week, so we can give you a preview of the Korea and Latvia games. And then at some point after that, we will be discussing what will be hopefully two glorious victories and three lovely points. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, and we will speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.